Welcome to The Market, sponsored by the CME Group. Dateline Chicago, Friday, December 22nd. Hello again, along with Max Armstrong. I'm Orion Samuelson for our weekly visit and look at the markets from Wall Street to the wheat fields. And, of course, it's a different kind of a trading week this week. We ended at noon on Friday, and so the trading week was 4.5 days long. And the market will not reopen now until the regular opening time on Tuesday morning in observance of the Christmas holiday. So no market trading now until next Tuesday morning. But some interesting things happening, of course, this week with the tax reform bill passing Congress, getting the signature of President Don Trump. And personally, I have to say, I'm curious why people would fight so hard and say so many bad things about tax reform. We haven't had tax reform in 30 years, and that's a long time to operate under one program in this fast-moving world today. But depending on who you listen to, the tax reform bill is going to be the worst thing that ever happened to the economy of the United States, or it will be a job builder and an economy builder. And we've certainly seen that happening on Wall Street during the year 2017 that's just now coming to an end in about a week. But curious to hear the political viewpoints depending on what party and where you're from. So it'll be interesting to see how much benefit we get from the new tax reform bill. And then there's this unusual thing that I'll admit at the very top. I probably shouldn't comment on it because I simply don't understand it. And that's the Bitcoin story, which to me at times sounds like we're playing with monopoly money, and which also seems to me that it's something that the market has conceived and brought to life so that people who don't trade wheat, corn, cattle, or soybeans, or stocks, now have something else to trade. It's going to take a while to convince me that it has a place in the marketplace, but the CME Group feels it does, and of course they're involved in it. We'll talk a little bit more about that in a few minutes. But let's look at what happened during this holiday shortened week, because the trading population on market floors certainly down, because a lot of the traders are waiting in airports to get on planes to go somewhere. And whenever you have a population on the trading floor that's lower, you sometimes worry that you can see some big market swings, because there's a lot fewer people trading on the floor. But let's look at the weekly numbers for the first thing. For the week, the S&P up nearly a third of a percentage point, the Dow up nearly a half a percentage point, and the NASDAQ up a third of a percentage point. And here are the closing numbers. The Dow today down 25 points, ending at 24,757. The S&P 500 down almost a point, ending the week at 26,83. The NASDAQ down nearly 5 points at 69,60.58. So what impacted the market today? Well, major indices dipped in low trading volume before the holiday weekend. Several blue chip stocks slipped in the market today, including Nike. Nike shares fell 2.33% after the company forecast quieter growth in current quarter revenue, reflecting its struggles in the North American market, particularly where Adidas sportswear and shoes making a real challenge to the Nike brand. United Health Group down 0.8% today after the health insurer agreed to buy Chilean healthcare company Banmédica for $2.8 billion. And we're winding down, of course, ahead of the Christmas holiday on Monday. One trader said it's been a strong week. Whether the market is up a little bit or down a little bit is not indicative of larger trends. It's easy to push things around when not many people are trading. And indeed, major Wall Street indices were on track to end the week higher, buoyed by historic overhaul of the U.S. tax code. The president signed the Republican $1.5 trillion tax overhaul into law today and also approved a short-term spending bill that averts a possible shutdown next week. And now the wildly volatile Bitcoin plunged below $12,000, losing around a third of its market value in 5 days. And companies that have been riding the Bitcoin wave were hit hard by the cryptocurrency's sharp decline today. Other activity that traders were looking at today, data showed that U.S. consumer spending went up in November, and shipments of key capital goods orders increased for the 10th straight month, confirming strong economic momentum. The benchmark S&P has climbed about 20% this year and is on track for its best performance since 2013, thanks to solid corporate earnings, strong economic fundamentals, upcoming cuts to corporate tax rates, and hopes of looser regulations. And so one of the stocks we looked at today, besides Nike and some of the technology stocks, Celgene Corporation shares down 1.4% after the company's drug failed in a clinical trial. So that's pretty much what happened today. And when we look at the sheet to watch in the week of December 26th to January 2nd, well, that weekly projection generally runs 5 or 6 pages on my Reuters machine, and today it's not even a full page. Here is what it has to say. With not much data scheduled for next week, investors will watch out for Consumer Confidence Index on December 26. It's expected to have decreased to 128.1 in December. That would be down from 129.5 the month before. Pending home sales figures expected on December 27th, likely to fall 0.8% in November after a 3.5% increase in October. And that's it. That's how long the look ahead to next week and what you should be watching in the marketplace is running today. We will look at one other report today that comes out every day, of course, and that is the oil market. Oil prices went up in light volumes today, steadying near their highest levels since 2015 on pledges from OPEC leader Saudi Arabia and non-OPEC Russia that any exit from crude output cuts would be gradual. So Brent crude futures today ended the session up 35 cents, $65.25 a barrel, its highest close since June of 2015, and West Texas Intermediate crude futures settled 11 cents higher at $58.47 a barrel. And so that's a look at some of the numbers that happened today. But now let me talk a little bit about the Bitcoin story, because I'll admit, I don't understand the trading of what looks to me like play money. But it's more than that. But here's the story on Reuters that ended the Bitcoin story this week. Bitcoin plunged by 30% to below $12,000 on Friday as investors dumped the cryptocurrency after its sharp rise to a peak close to $20,000 prompted warnings by experts that there could be a bubble. After falling to as low as $11,159, it recovered some losses to trade above $14,000 on the Bitstamp platform, down 9% on the day, also down about 25% this week, its largest weekly loss since April of 2013. It capped a brutal week that had been touted as a new era of mainstream trading for the digital currency when the Bitcoin futures debuted on CME Group, the world's largest derivatives market, last Sunday. But Friday's fall bled into the U.S. stock market, where shares of companies that have lashed their fortunes to Bitcoin or blockchain, its underlying technology, took a knock. Long Black Blockchain Corporation, Overstock.com, Riot Blockchain Incorporated, and Marathon Patent Group lost between 2% and 15%. Now, the longest and best-known cryptocurrency has risen around 20-fold since the start of the year, climbing from less than $1,000 to as high as $19,666 on the Luxembourg-based Bitstamp exchange last Sunday, and to over $20,000 on other exchanges, but it has fallen each day since that happened. So it's something that is impacting the market, certainly. But it's going to be interesting to see what kind of a future we'll have with the Bitcoin. The housing industry got several reports this week that said it's continuing to gain strength. Some of the headlines that came across my Reuters computer this week, U.S. new home sales race to more than a 10-year high in November. That report headline came out December 22nd. On December 20th, the headline said U.S. home sales hit 11-year highs as supplies of homes are still tight. And then the other headline, U.S. existing home sales jumped to an 11-year high. That was the headline on December 20th. And then today, also this week, we saw a headline December 19th. U.S. single-family housing starts and permits hit a 10-year high. So when you put all of those headlines together, I guess you're looking at about a 10-year high in the entire housing industry, and still a lack of inventory. And some builders saying they can't find the carpenters to build homes fast enough. Well, something else that's been around since the 1970s seems to be gaining, and that's ethanol. We're going to talk about where it stands at the moment when we continue here on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
It started as gasohol back in the 70s. A lot of people objected, said we couldn't put food into our gas tanks. That's all changed, and we're going to talk to Robert White with the Renewable Fuels Association about the tremendous change in this industry. But we still have our detractors, don't we?
We do, and a lot of it is a well-funded misinformation campaign from our competition. We have successfully infiltrated the fuel market at about 10.5% of the total volume. And no one would ever believe that. No one would have believed that 10 years ago, let alone 30 years ago, in the days of gas a haul back into the 70s.
And I wouldn't have believed we'd be exporting it to countries around the world. Talk to me about that.
Well, we think we're going to have a record year. There's obviously been some hurdles this past year with China, the European Union, and even in Brazil. But we think we'll export 1.3 billion gallons of ethanol. And if you look back 15 years ago, we weren't making that much for ourselves. But we've come a long way, and we're exporting to some unique countries like United Arab Emirates, who send us their oil and we send them ethanol back. Whatever works, I guess. But the reality is the export market is growing because of emissions concerns in some of these developing countries. China is looking at developing their own 10% ethanol standard. India is growing leaps and bounds. All of these countries need some way to clean up their fuel. Ethanol is a renewable, cleaner burning product that at the same time is also cheaper than their gasoline. So they get multiple benefits from using it.
You also had challenges from the U.S. auto industry. Have we overcome those?
We are definitely making some good progress. We've had E10, when 10% ethanol or gasohol was introduced, there was some concern. Funny how that was even during leaded gasoline days. We've come a lot with just gasoline in general. And you fast forward to 2012 when E15 was approved. We had flex fuel vehicles introduced in the middle of all that. And now we're looking at a market where 90% of the new vehicles from model year 2018 embrace and warranty and approve the use of 15% ethanol in their vehicles.
So are we still hearing that we can't put food into the gas tank and that food versus fuel fight?
It will never die. Yeah. It will never die. I had the unique privilege of meeting with an international delegation just 2 weeks ago. And the Argentinians were telling me that they're currently fighting a food versus fuel debate and wanted to know how we successfully won that debate. I told them I'm not sure the victory was completely accepted yet, but nonetheless, we have seen situations where people think the number two field corn is the corn that they see in the can at the grocery store. And I've always made the joke that come out to Kansas in August or September, and we'll gladly walk you out and see if your dentist can support your trying of that corn in the field if you think it's really food. But there's just so much disconnect now between agricultural, right, rural communities and the growing population that we have to do our part as much as possible to educate those. I was at all things but the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally this year.
Oh, really?
And we've promoted ethanol out there for a number of years. And one gentleman came up to me and he goes, I appreciate the high octane. I appreciate the price. I just don't know if it's right to turn food into fuel. And I said, do you know that we have multiple products that come out of these biorefineries? And I explained all that to him. Yeah. He shook his head and he said, that's the story you need to tell. Well, we do tell that story, yeah, but the opposition has a much larger wallet and a much larger voice. But we do our best, and it proved once again, if you get to the individual, you can change their mind.
Right. And of course, the byproducts from ethanol, tremendous new industry as well for the export.
Absolutely.
Market.
And some would argue that the ethanol is the co-product now.
Yes.
It's not even the main output, but we're seeing some of our producer members making biodiesel, renewable, yeah, diesel, cellulosic ethanol, selling the corn fiber, selling the oil, you name it. They're diversifying, so no matter what the marketplace throws at them, they have another option to help manage that bottom line.
Robert White, keep on doing what you're doing.
Thank you, sir.
Renewable Fuels Association.
For more than 150 years, CME Group has been built with your confidence. Without it, we simply wouldn't be in business. Today, we continue to work on new and better ways to protect you and grow your confidence in the markets. After all, it's our vigilance that brings you the peace of mind you need today and in the future. CME Group. Advance with confidence.
We ended this trading week in agriculture with the November feedlot report from USDA, and it continues to show we're going to have ample supplies of cattle on feed, and we're going to have ample supplies of beef at the meat counter for the next 6 months or so, because to the surprise of quite a few traders, and I'm betting this will have an impact on Tuesday when the market opens, the November placements were up 13.9% from a year ago, November to November. That's the report that came out after the market closed today. The result exceeded the high end of the range of forecasts by analysts, partly fueled by low feed prices in the wake of this fall's bumper corn and soybean crops in the U.S. They also talked about dryness in parts of the northern plains that landed cattle in states where feed is more plentiful. Now, the big numbers for placements were in Corn Belt states, with the whopper being Minnesota, up 37% from a year ago. That's the word of Don Roos, who is U.S. Commodities President. November's larger-than-expected placement increase could weigh on cattle prices this spring, and at the same time should keep beef costs low for consumers. If we see those lower cattle prices translated into lower prices at the meat counter, now there are times when that certainly doesn't happen, and that makes cattle feeders very unhappy. But looking at the numbers, placements on feed in November, 2,099,000 head. That's up 13.9% from a year earlier. The government put the feedlot cattle supply as of December 1st at 11,516,000 head. That's up 8.1% from a year ago. And USDA said the number of cattle sold to packers or cattle marketed were up 3.2% in November from a year ago. And analysts had projected a gain of 30% over last year's numbers. And then today's monthly cold storage report showed total November beef stocks at 487 million pounds, down only 4% from October and down 8% from a year ago. November beef stocks dropped 20 million pounds from the month before, and that is the largest decline in beef in storage for the month of November since 1998. According to Rich Nelson, who is chief strategist at Allendale, it confirms industry talk that retailers were heavily focused on advertising beef. So we'll look at those closing prices toward the end of the show today to get an idea of where we'll be starting on Monday when we begin, or on Tuesday when we begin the trade after the holiday for Christmas. Oh, and by the way, talking about schedule, a reminder too that schedule of this week ahead of Christmas will be the same as it will be ahead of the New Year's weekend. Again, closing at noon on Friday before New Year's, and then opening up again on Tuesday, the first Tuesday of the year. Some of the other notes in the world of agriculture this week. Well, the National Beef Board, which is the industry organization that promotes the sale of beef and export of beef, has a new boss. The chief executive officer for the Cattlemen's Beef Promotion and Research Board oversees collection of $1 per head on all cattle sold in the U.S. and $1 per head equivalent on imported cattle, beef, and beef products. Scott Stewart is the man who is taking over that job as he leaves his post at the National Livestock Producers Association.
He was unanimously approved for his position by the Cattlemen's Beef Board Executive Committee and full board on December 20th, and he begins his tenure at the Cattlemen's Beef Board. That will begin on February 1st of next year, and it'll take place at the annual convention of the NCBA, that's the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Their meeting will be held January 31st to February 2nd in Phoenix. So let's take a look at where we ended the trade this week today. Let's look at the grain market first of all. The soybean futures moved slightly higher today. For the first time in seven sessions, in a short covering bounce, but still remained near a three-month low as rain forecast in Argentina eased concern about a potential supply risk. Trading volumes, of course, were light in the holiday shortened session today, and markets again will be closed until Tuesday morning. Weekend showers are forecast for the Argentine crop belts, which on top of recent rainfalls has eased concerns about drought in the world's third largest soybean exporter. Joe Viklavik, president of Chicago-based Standard Grain, said Argentina started dry and the soybean market in particular had built some premium in. Well, we've seen that premium completely erased here in the last couple of weeks because of the improvement in weather. And more stringent specifications for U.S. soybean imports in China, the top importer, have pressured futures this week as they could curb strong Chinese demand that continues to see the world's largest importer of soybeans move higher. For the week, January soybeans down 2.1%. Wheat prices eased as traders squared positions ahead of the holiday weekend after two sessions of gains and as U.S. weather forecasts showed the risk of freeze damage to winter crops has lessened in recent days. The grain has been supported by an increase in export demand, something we haven't seen for a while. This coming after wheat futures hit life-of-contract lows last week. Millers in Thailand bought 150,000 tons of U.S. spring wheat and hard red winter wheat, according to traders. Asian livestock producers, meanwhile, have stepped up purchases of soft red winter wheat. Sales last week at the highest in 3 years. So that's what happened in the grain market. Now, what about the livestock market? Well, the bulk of Chicago Mercantile Exchange live cattle contracts closed lower today, pressured by the morning's bearish monthly cattle on feed report. And the feeling is that that 14% increase in the number placed on feed will be bearish when the market opens on Tuesday. As we said earlier, data showed more cattle than expected going into feedlots in November than a year ago. And so we will continue to watch the up and down ride we've been watching for months now in the cattle market. It just doesn't want to settle down and get any really strong upward move going. It's going to be interesting to see how cattlemen are feeling at the Cattlemen's Convention, as we said, taking place in Phoenix the end of January and early February. December live cattle finished today 20 cents higher, and that put it at $119.82. And February cattle ended $1.10 lower at $118.57. This week, cash cattle in the U.S. Plains traded from $119 to $120 per hundredweight, and that was pretty much unchanged from last week. Tight supplies in parts of the Plains and grocers buying beef to avoid potential shortages when plants close during the Christmas holiday, and that helped to support cash prices. And what about the hog trade? Lean hogs climbed on fund buying today in Friday's USDA bullish monthly cold storage pork stocks results, which offset the morning's USDA neutral to mildly bearish quarterly hog report today. So that's what's happening. That's what's not going to happen for the next 3 days or so, but we'll all get underway on Monday, and we'll be reporting again next week. So thank you very much for joining us on The Markets, sponsored by the CME Group.